This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And today, aside from the usual Bad Ideas squad, we are joined here in the Bad Ideas Batcave, the remote Bad Ideas Batcave, but the Bad Ideas Batcave in spirit, by one of our favorite people in podcasting and definitely one of the most talented and most prolific people working in the field of audio fiction.
Indeed.
They are the sound designer extraordinaire for, if we listed everything that they've done, we would be here all day long. But most recently, and I think with the most high profile, sound designer for Marvel itself, it's Misha Stanton.
Hello. That was very nice. I was blushing the whole time, but this is an audio medium, so you couldn't see it.
That was very accurate. That was just reading some facts.
Statement of facts.
Okay.
Misha, how are you doing? Thank you so much for being on the show.
Sure. All of my other friends have been on the show and have told me what a great time they've had, so I couldn't resist.
Aww. Yes. The viral guest marketing is working. Yes.
Peer pressure is the kind that we excel at.
Don't do drugs.
So, if you are tuning into No Bad Ideas for the first time, here is the way that this very silly show works. Every week, the hosts go out, they scour the internet for stories about bad judgment, terrible ideas, just all kinds of ill-conceived nonsense. We bring them in, we horrify each other and our guests, and then we give ourselves just 10 minutes, just 10 very, very short minutes to try to kind of spin that bad idea straw into story gold and figure out how to turn it into the pitch for at least the beginnings of a good story, whether that's a movie, a book, a comic book, a very, very long-winded fortune cookie somewhere. And today, I believe that our first bad idea is from Miss Sarah Shackett.
Oh, yes. Hello. I'm glad that you mentioned the, like, spinning of gold, because I feel like this thing that I have, which,
did,
I'll be honest.
Did I just throw a petard without even noticing that I'm throwing a petard and it is now sailing back my way?
No, you're fine. You just amused me, which is sometimes the same thing. but, like, I'll admit that this is more of a weird circumstance than a bad idea that anyone had, but it, I think, would be the great setting for a fairy tale.
Oh, boy.
So this comes to us from the New York Post, and the headline reads, Bolivian Orchestra Stranded at Haunted German Castle Surrounded by Wolves.
Oh, God.
A Bolivian pan flute orchestra has been stuck in quarantine on the grounds.
I'm sorry. Yep. A Bolivian what orchestra?
Pan flute. Pan flute orchestra. Yep. A thing I'm very glad exists and goes on tour, but
truly the stuff
they've
of
been
both
trapped.
Dreams and nightmares.
Seriously.
On the grounds of a grand 15th century palace outside of Berlin for 2 months.
Fuck. Oh my God.
Over 20 members of the Orquestra Experimental de Instrumentos Nativos have been stuck on the grounds and buildings of Rheinsberg Palace, a castle complete with moat, which has housed generations of German royals, according to the BBC.
Wow.
Coming this summer, only music can soothe the savage beast.
That's right.
No, right? The group arrived in Germany on March 10th, expecting to perform at the, I'm going to mispronounce this, März Musik Festival, the same day that Germany announced its ban on large gatherings.
Swiftly followed by
a full country lockdown. Hey, remember the pandemic? A week later, Bolivia closed its borders and the group was stranded at the 600-acre estate, surrounded, just inserted casually into the sentence, surrounded by 23 packs of wolves and haunted by the ghosts.
a wolf convention.
And haunted by the ghost of Frederick
the going around and quantifying how many packs there are?
My God.
Naturalists? I'm not sure. It's also haunted by the ghosts of Frederick the Great. No big deal. We all joke that Frederick's ghost is following us and trying to trip us up. Carmen Matella told the BBC, I don't usually believe in such things, but it does feel as if there are ghosts on the grounds. Tracy Prado, who just joined the orchestra in December, ran into wolves during one of her walks. Oh. I just froze in fear, but they were just play fighting and moved on, she said.
Oh,
to pass the time, the group practices up to 6 hours a day, takes walks looking out for wolves, and plays soccer. The Bolivian embassy told the BBC it is trying to get the orchestra out by early June via Madrid, although they didn't comment on how the musicians would get from Rheinsberg to Madrid. In the meantime, quote, there are worse places to be trapped, Miguel Cordoba told the BBC. There? When I wake up, I watch the sunrise over the forest and the lake. Back home, I only hear the sounds of traffic.
And when night falls, the wolves attack.
Well, this is where I require all of you to step in. So I'm going to put 10 minutes on a timer. Take it away, gentlemen.
Just a quick clarifying question.
Sure.
How did they end up at this castle? Was that the...
They were there to play a concert, and then the country locked down.
But, okay, but, like, the concert was supposed to be at the castle itself.
I believe so?
I think that, like, the thing that I'm trying to suss out is whether that was their intended place where they were going to stay, or if it was, oh dear, you can't go home, we need to find you some lodging. I know. We'll put you up at the old Brunswick place or whatever.
Yeah, the article does not say, so it is entirely possible that, like, the German municipal government was like, oh man, all of these musicians, where are we going to put them? There's that old castle up there.
Right.
Well, yeah. Okay, so the wild animal aspect definitely reads supernatural to me, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
It's definitely. I remember as a kid reading the Cirque du Freak books. Did anybody else read the Cirque du Freak books?
No.
Okay, there was this YA series where, like, a kid gets inducted into a magical world of vampires, and they take a lot of liberties with vampire lore, one of which is that as man evolved from apes, vampires evolved from wolves with a little magic thrown in there.
Not bats?
So I'm... What?
Not bats.
No. It's very wolves and snakes and spiders.
All right.
Interesting.
Yeah, but mostly wolves. And so it just makes me feel like they were supposed to be there for a vampire convention. And, like, they booked this musical guest.
Oh, no.
Who now can't leave.
Both and guest and Andre. Oh,
yeah. Boy. This yeah, is, dinner and a
this
show.
This is like the version of What We Do in the Shadows that actually has their shit together.
Yeah. I love that show.
It's so good.
I think that there is absolutely a lot of mileage to be had in the idea of two conventions double booking the same castle accidentally. One is I think that, like, it's even like, because, like, the name of their orchestra was the Experimental Orchestra,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like Experimental Orchestra of Native Instruments, if my musical Spanish is serving me.
Yeah,
okay.
So go ahead.
No, so there's definitely, so these are ancient instruments, or, like, instruments that have been
power,
bypassed by,
like,
the modern world. Yes,
right.
That summoned the wolves.
Right. Absolutely.
I love, like, it so much.
I'm really not even making this up. This is just sounds like it, like, what happened.
And I think that in that case, and I do 100% buy into the theory of, like, that is legitimately what is going on here. In that case, the first act of this movie, and maybe not the first act, maybe just kind of like the establishing 10 minutes, needs to be kind of the montage of all of these people repeatedly getting told kind of, you know, get another job. Nobody wants to listen to that. Like those instruments, like they don't have any influence. They don't have any, you know, they don't carry any
weight. It's all about synths, baby.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, they have to be a ragtag band, right? They have to be the underdog at the beginning.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and they are kind of going to these all these competitions and just getting like booed off stage because nobody wants to listen to these, you know, very old, very kind of like different instruments. But then, oh boy, do they find their crowd when they accidentally summon the horde of vampire wolves in the creepy castle, the creepy haunted castle, too. There's also like a ghost element there, right?
Oh, my God.
Well, those are the two competing conventions. You've got a you got a vampire convention and a ghost convention.
I see.
It's sounding very much to me like, yeah, OK, so there were these musicians that are very downtrodden. They're not really well respected. And they finally get their first big gig. Right.
Yeah.
And and it
because
gets
somebody
shut
cancels
down
at the last moment.
Well, yeah. Well, it gets shut down by a global crisis. Right. There's nothing you can do about that. And they're just stuck here. But they find that, like, if they can put on a really good show, they can solve the feud between ghosts and vampire wolves.
I love it.
And it comes down to like a like a battle of the bands at the end, and it's really heartwarming, and it's like nice.
I love it. This is the sort of it's not like a prequel or a sequel. It's just kind of like a parallel story set in the same universe as Coco that we didn't realize we needed.
The supernatural prom.
Yeah.
Supernatural prom.
Oh, yes. Title sorted. And it can be like kind of a Romeo and Juliet situation where there's like one of the vampires and one of the ghosts who really like each other, but they won't admit it yet because they're on opposite sides.
Sure. One of them is played by Eddie Redmayne because you have to have him in this big ensemble cast.
Yeah.
I love it. And they kind of are having this very real will they won't they chemistry, and the band is trying to kind of distract the rest of the crew so that they can go meet off in secret. Oh, that's great. I love it.
And and by the end they learn that okay, maybe they will never achieve mainstream success in the light of day, but in the dark of night, there's something for them.
Perfect.
They find their people. They're just their people just happen to be dead.
Yeah. And maybe the thing is they find kind of a way to write new songs with these old instruments.
I like
there
that.
Is kind of this element of, yes, we do kind of actually embrace the fact that we can't just be playing these classical compositions.
Right. They have to run them through a synth pedal.
Well, have y'all ever seen anybody beatbox with a pan flute?
No. I have, actually. It's
pretty rad.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for that Google.
Yeah, it's a good Google, but like you know, anything you can do with vocal percussion, you can do with a panpipe there also.
I really like that angle of coming up with new compositions, because if you have these like ancient vampires and ghosts, they can weigh in on like, oh, everyone thought that that piece was trash, you know, 400 years ago. This one is much better.
There's also like a fantasy take on that Fifth Element scene.
Yeah, there can be like an element of before they go on this, you know, doomed holiday to Europe. Nobody likes their music because they think that it's too old. The ghosts and the vampires hear it, and because they've been alive for thousands of years or undead for thousands of years, they're kind of going like, no, this is too Baroque for us. We need, you know, something a little bit more traditional. And these guys are kind of going, what? No.
One of the two romantic partners have been a failed composer in life. And finally, with the orchestra, they get the chance to have their music played.
Perfect.
And there's one old ghost who's like even older than all the other ghosts, who's a big curmudgeon and won't dance, but they break him out of his shell over the course of the movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you have about 1 minute, 50 seconds. Is there anything else you want to throw into this heartwarming ensemble?
We should talk about, is there a leader in the band? Like, you know, it's pretty clearly an ensemble movie, but is there kind of a, sequels?
Is there a leader of the band? I don't know if there's a leader so much as, what's the...
Conductor?
Conductor, thank you, that's the word. Mm-hmm. And they can act as like the team coach that gives the rallying cry in the middle of halftime. And who can, you know, like, okay, we went out there and maybe we don't know what kind of music these ghosts and vampires would enjoy.
But go learn it.
I know there's something. You have something that these undead folks don't have. You have heart.
Or at the very least, you have a heartbeat. That definitely, at least half of them don't have that.
Clear eyes, pumping hearts can't lose.
Perfect.
Working eyes, pumping heart can't lose.
Yeah.
All right. Solved it. Great. Perfect.
I feel like we didn't have to do a lot to that one. There was just so much already there.
It really was gift wrapped before we even got started. At the end of the movie, do they leave? Do they kind of like stay on as the
chamber orchestra?
Yeah, for this castle.
I think they've gotta leave.
I think that they end up staying in the supernatural world, but then in the sequel they do like a world tour, kind of like in Trolls, where they go to the different supernatural factions and then you see more cultures and stuff.
I like that.
That sounds really good.
I watched Trolls World Tour recently.
It's streaming online, I hear.
You gotta watch things in the quarantine, dog.
That's time. Well done, everyone.
Fabulous.
Sarah, where was this story from?
This is from the New York Post.
New York Post, jeez. Wow.
And it's from the end of May, so hopefully by now this poor Bolivian orchestra has gotten out of Germany. But
you know what? The New York Post would just casually throw in 23 wolf packs in the middle of a sentence and then not refer to it again. God damn it, New York Post, every time.
I love that.
Priorities, and I'm also, man.
And I'm also just like, what is the minimum number of wolves that make up a pack?
Right.
Like, how many hundreds of wolves are we talking about here?
Oh my God.
Right. Is it?
Yeah. Three's a crowd.
Let's go do a quick Google about this. But after that, we're going to be right back with another bad idea.
Hey, y'all. Sarah here. We hope that you are enjoying this episode and that you are excited to find out what madness is in store with our second bad idea. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about something that is decidedly not a bad idea, and that is checking out Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History. It is an anthology show produced by Historic Royal Palaces and our friends at Rusty Quill, and its focus is bringing you the kind of historical stories that you don't normally hear about. Sounds simple, yeah? Well, their stories are actually anything but most of the time. If you tune in, you'll hear stories about moral quandaries, existential questions, responsibility, radical astronomy, piracy, spycraft, severed heads, and so much more. Plus, it's all put together by an amazing team, acted out by some really terrific performers, and written by an award-winning team of writers, including a team of creators of shows like The Far Meridian, Wooden Overcoats, and We Fix Space Junk. So, if you need an escape, check out Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History. You can look for it wherever good podcasts are found, or at rustyquill.com/outliers. Okay, let's get to that second bad idea.
And welcome back, everybody. We're back from the woods. The ghosts continue to haunt us. We're here for another helping of badness. this time from yours truly via Sky News. Are y'all ready for this?
No.
I'm so excited.
You really can't be.
Yeah, and, no, there's... There's been some build up.
I wish that I could cut into the episode, sorry, the article straight away and come back to the headline, but it really just kind of delivers the goods right off. So there's no beating around the bush.
All right.
Pair hired for man's sexual broom fantasy turns up in wrong bedroom at wrong address with machetes.
No.
That's a lot, Zach.
Big yikes.
After appearing in an unsuspecting resident's bedroom with knives at 6:15 a.m., the duo accepted their mistake, saying, "Sorry, mate." Two men snuck into a bedroom with machetes after being hired to carry out a stranger's sexual fantasy of being tied up in his underwear and stroked with a broom, only to discover they had got the wrong address. The pair from Sydney, Australia, made their apologies and left the startled victim's bedroom as soon as they realized their mistake.
Oh my God.
One of the men.
Which one? Which mistake?
One of the men, Terrence Leroy, has now been acquitted of entering the home in July 2019, intending to intimidate while armed with an offensive weapon after the New South Wales District Court accepted his explanation. Conceding the, quote, facts of the case are unusual, end quote, Judge Sean Grant out his reasons for the not guilty verdict, saying the evidence did not suggest the men's actions were intentional. Quote, they carried the machetes either as a prop or something to use in that fantasy, he said.
Okay. All right.
I feel like machetes, first off, have to be a separate hard limit that you set from broom play.
I agree.
That, like, I don't see where in the initial description of the sexual fantasy the machetes even came into it.
Right. And I was going to make a joke about, like, is that just standard equipment for Australians? But I think this goes beyond that.
I'm not sure these questions get answered, but I think you'll appreciate where we end up. Quote, the fantasy was unscripted and there was discretion as to how it would be carried out. End quote. Okay. According to court documents, a man living in Western New South Wales near Griffith, quote, wanted a broom handle to be rubbed around his underwear. Quote, he was willing to pay $5,000 if it was, quote, really good, quote, documents said.
All right.
Police said the intended client had, quote, history and proclivity for engaging the services of people. He had made arrangements with a man on Facebook for people to engage in the role play and sent his address before he later updated it after moving houses more than 30 miles away.
Oh, Jesus.
But the resident of the home where the men mistakenly turned up told police that when he noticed a light on in his lounge at around 6:15 a.m., he assumed it was a friend who visits daily to make coffee. He said he called out, "Bugger off, it's too early." After hearing a voice asking, "Is your name Kevin?" the man said he turned his lights on to see two men he did not recognize standing next to his bed, both holding machetes. A conversation then ensued in which the pair repeatedly sought to establish whether he was, quote, Kevin, each time being told no in response. At one point, one of them asked, "Are you sure you're not Kevin? We were told to come to this address to pick up Kevin." Eventually accepting their error, the two then left, with one saying, "Sorry, mate," and shaking the resident's hand, while the other said, "Bye." The resident then called police. The intended client called the men soon after to check on their whereabouts, at which point they realized their error. The two men and their driver eventually arrived at the correct address, where the would-be customer spotted one had a great big knife in his trousers. The customer told him not to bring the weapon inside, and he left it in the car. Court documents say all three men then entered the correct property. The client began cooking bacon and eggs and noodles, and after being asked to do so by Leroy, who then, quote, fell asleep on the couch. Police arrived at the property around an hour later and arrested Leroy and the other man who had appeared in the incorrect bedroom. The judge said it had not proved that Leroy's intentions had been to intimidate. Leroy's lawyer said it was a commercial agreement to tie up and stroke a semi-naked man in his underpants with a broom. Entry was not with intent to intimidate. And that is the end of that gem of a bad idea.
So my immediate vibe here. Yeah. Tell me what you guys think about this.
There are 10 minutes on the clock.
My immediate vibe with this one is eyes wide shut, right? It's a weird thing that happens one night. And then the story I want to see is just the next 48 hours as all of those people try to go about their ordinary lives. And it's just like an ordinary slice of life thing. But in the back of your mind, this thing just happened.
Right.
Before we dive into this, I think it is just worth saying for a second, just that is a hilarious article. Absolutely no shame for what consenting adults do and for what kind of like everyone is on board for. No shade either in my book for what sounds like an honest mistake. Some shade for, again, why are these machetes involved? Like
a broom
at what
party.
Point?
Yeah.
Right. So if it's an improvised scene, like did they had to have approved the machetes beforehand?
Which it doesn't sound like they
were going like for extra credit.
It seems like this was.
Oh, my God. All right. Cool. Just wanted to sort of say that. But I really do love that. Angle of attack with this of just sort of how do you go back to sort of like your seemingly normal life after having sort of a truly bizarre brush with kind of this very, very different world that exists secretly.
It's sort of
it's sort of like the
uncanny life, right? You've been revealed something behind a curtain and now you have to go back to what you were doing before with the new knowledge of what exists beyond.
Totally. I love that. So in that case, then the kind of bizarre stumbling into something would have to happen pretty early on in the story. Like in the first third or so.
Yeah. Like a coda to start the film. I was going to make an up montage style joke, but I think I want to hold back because I don't actually want to pay that off.
Right.
It's like a lifetime of machete room breaking and entering.
I don't know. Maybe it's a mini series where you get one episode that follows each person after the fact. So you follow like the guy whose house was broken into, one of the two guys that did the breaking, the other of the two guys, and also the dude who was waiting on them for hours that never showed up to his house, right? Because that guy got tied up. And the driver was a separate person. That's five episodes for me.
There you go, yeah.
There we go.
I would watch that BBC miniseries.
And they kind of have all these connections where, you know, one of them goes home and complains to his wife. And then, like, when you see, like, one of the other episodes, his wife turns up, like, in that story somehow, but, like, in ways that, like, these two characters would never connect them. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Right. That as much as we want to deny the ways in which we are connected, we cannot. And they all come together sort of at the end. I dig this, y'all. This is great.
Yeah. What's even great is you could do seasons of like, 12 or I mean, however many you can come up with for one event, but then every season could have a new inciting event.
That's right.
That has a whole new, then it becomes an anthology of anthologies. Ooh.
A new
wait,
kind
this
of.
This has real franchise potential, y'all.
A new kind of like brush with that uncanny
world.
Yeah,
like it's always like a super weird thing. Yeah. And then you just
this
go
is
back
what,
to life.
This is what Charlie Brooker will follow up Black Mirror with.
Yeah. It has big Black Mirror vibes.
Right?
As the cascade of events falls out, like somebody's gonna lose their house and stuff. Like something's gonna happen. Weird ripple effect is gonna happen out of this. Someone is not gonna be able to handle and is just gonna like spiral. Like I'm already spiraling a little bit just thinking about it. Have y'all seen Paranoia Agent?
No.
No.
Not all of it, but yes.
Oh, it's an anime about a series of serial killings in Tokyo and Japan, and they all kind of revolve around these archetypes, and it's very it's anthology in a similar way, where it follows how these characters connect to this one story and this one kind of evolving series of events that happens maybe someplace else in their country, but like it all connects back, and you're never sure if this is a real serial killer or if it's just the manifestation of everyone's collective fear. What a good show. But and you could do something like that with this, but with weird sex stuff.
And it's from the guy that made Paprika and Deep Blue.
Cool. And Deep Blue, right.
So there's sort of like a lot of those common elements of like how much of this is us projecting things outside of ourselves, how much of this is things outside of ourselves acting into us.
What is a collective hallucination? What is actually a force? Right? Yeah, it's dope.
And when Zach, as you were describing that, I'm like, oh, that sounds like a dream. Mm-hmm. The series of events you describe sound like a dream. And then, like, I think that's where I'm at with this story. It was like, I want to see what happens when you wake up and you just have to go to work the next day.
I want to see the, like, mini suspense movie that is, you know, 2 days later or something, one of the guys is like, you know, their spouse is kind of going, hey, by the way, don't forget we have that like parent teacher meeting tonight, like we need to like go talk to like Bobby's teacher about like that thing that is going on.
Oh my
god. And
then
like the spouse and the guy show up, and sure enough, Bobby's teacher is another one of the people involved in this, and they immediately recognize each other and just have to kind of be like,
is it not Kevin, the guy that he like broke, that they broke in on, that was like,
it's someone, maybe you know, like it's either Kevin or it's the client or it's the driver, another person kind of involved in this 5-point star. And it's a question of kind of, are they going to flip out? Are we going to get through this pretending that this is the first time that we're meeting and we've never seen one another?
Yeah. That's like a Pinter play.
It is.
Yeah.
It is very Pinter-esque. Yeah.
Oh, that's very good. Or like, what's the one? Nothing. I'm just going to spin out into weird theater. But yes, no, I would I would watch. Oh, I mean, God of Carnage has elements of that. Mm-hmm. Also, I think my favorite movie ever, It's a Disaster, is a fun thing where like people are just, it's just my favorite bottle. But I would watch that play where it's all one set, right? It's just in the classroom and there's a parent teacher conference. And I like, you just watch that, because then like, the spouse finds out about it and the administrator comes in and the administrator finds out what they're talking about, but it takes 20 minutes each and it's like really slow suspense beats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so good.
It's good shit.
What is
so this? I guess, how much time do we have first,
about
Zach?
2 minutes. 1 minute,
okay,
45
so we can't
seconds.
Probably figure out what happens to everybody.
Probably not.
But we can maybe figure out what happens to the client and the two
machete wielding providers, servicemen.
So Kevin just has to go to work and has mysterious rope burns on his wrist the next day, right?
Yeah.
where he got ditched by these two dudes that he hired, and he's kind of grumpy about it, kind of just stupid, why did I even get these? And everyone around his office is like, hey, are you okay? Like, did something happen? But yeah, it's fine. And he's not, everybody's like, did he get kidnapped? Well, he doesn't seem upset he just seems angry.
Yeah. It's a surprise performance review day. And so like, he's, thinking about play situations where he's, you know, put one-on-one in a room with his like new boss, who is a very sensitive and caring person. And is like, Kevin, we're not going to address things until we address you. And are you okay? And I see the burns on your arms.
Oh my god!
And then it's like, how do I get out of the situation without explaining my kinks?
Yeah, wow. Well, that's a really relatable situation. We've all had that, right?
I think we've all been there. Oh yeah.
Okay, good, cool. No, thank you.
I mean, independent contractor, not usually a problem, but.
Yeah, what do the two guys go back and do?
Well, I think that there's two sort of like paths in the woods. One is kind of, I think, closer to what happened in real life, which is they get arrested and they have to kind of be like, no. This was a, you know, an agreed upon thing. It was an honest mistake, blah, blah, blah. I think that like the other option is the one where it's maybe the first time that these guys are doing something like this. They are very nervous. They've never worked together before. It is kind of, you know, like their first time. They think that they're okay to do this. They're really not okay to do it. They are just like in over their heads.
That would explain the machetes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
They just look in the back of their van. What do you think's good for a scene? I don't know. We got rope. What, machetes? What do you think? Brooms?
Yeah, bring the machetes.
That's time.
Bring whatever.
But my God, I am so proud of what you guys have turned this very, very out there idea into.
No, I have to say, this may be one of the favorite formats that we've ever stumbled upon. Just that, like,
oh my gosh. That honestly has franchise potential. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, you sort of begin with a very weird, bizarre thing. And kind of like inevitably anything that happens after that sort of turns into like a little suspense movie, no matter how suburban or mundane it is.
Right. It's like vaguely high maintenance meets True Detective, but with like a kink bent.
It's like Eyes Wide Shut high maintenance.
Right, yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
With the franchise last. With the franchise sort of like format of there's
as
always
the
a new
demanded.
Cast of True Detective.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God. Hats off, Zach. What a gem of a find.
My pleasure. What a ridiculous series of events. I feel like the moving detail was what had me first be like, this is like, how could you go solicit these services and move 30 miles away without making thoroughly sure that people are coming to the right place?
Let this be a reminder, everyone. File your change of address forms with all your services.
Well, thank you guys for that. And thank all of you for listening. We will be back on Thursday with another episode of No Bad Ideas.
And thank you, Misha, for being on and being our special guest star.
My pleasure.
This has been No Bad Ideas. Produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.